Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So ESPN has paid kind of a nice compliment here to a couple Georgia stars, Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, mentioned by Mitch Sherman, a staff writer, as the best tandem of running backs in the country. Now, that's probably not a surprise to see Michel and Chubb mentioned in that conversation. Kind of nice to see him at the top of the list. And in the piece at ESPN.com, it also features kind of a nice quote here from Dell McGee, the Georgia running back coach, who says, "They have a great passion for the game, and they definitely have a great friendship. They push each other on the football field, in the weight room, and in the classroom. They're a great example for our whole team." The writer also kind of gives an interesting stat here. He says they have a career total of 5,835 yards over the last three seasons, which is more than any other combo of running backs in the entire country. So that's an ESPN analysis of what Nick Chubb, Sony Michel might be able to do this year, and putting him at the top of the running back combos around the country. Well, that's a pretty nice thing to have said about your duo when you think about how many good running back tandems there are, not just around the nation, but also in the SEC alone. And it sounds like, you know, Kirby Smart, based on some of the comments he had back during the spring and throughout the offseason, would certainly be expecting big things for Chubb and Michel this season, especially when it comes to Nick Chubb and his health. As you know, the running back that Kirby Smart saw in spring this year, so much different than the guy he saw a year ago when Chubb was still undergoing, in the early stages really, the recovery from his 2015 knee injury. Here's how Kirby Smart has explained it.
He's a different guy this spring compared to last spring for obvious reasons, but I think that you know more about last fall by what you see this spring out of Nick, that he's a lot closer to 100%. He's certainly got a lot more burst and power.
Sony Michel, a little different story here. He's been healthy, and not only does he provide a great deal of success to Georgia on the field, but there's also an off-field, intangible quality that Michel seems to bring to the table as well, and Kirby Smart's noticed that too.
More importantly than just on the gridiron, he impacted our team more off the field than probably anybody. He's not a guy that is afraid to speak out. He's not afraid to challenge others, which I appreciate as a coach, having been around a lot of players like that in my past. He has that it factor to do that.
So Kirby Smart praises the leadership of Sony Michel, discusses the health of Nick Chubb. ESPN says that duo working together is the best tandem of running backs in all of college football. So what could possibly go wrong? Well, that's where Jim Donnan, the former Georgia coach, who I thought was a great guest yesterday on Dog Nation Daily, made a really good point. As much as we may like Chubb, as much as we may like Michel, and as excited as we are about what they're going to be able to do here at Georgia in their final season, there is one thing that both Chubb and Michel need to truly fulfill their fullest potential. Here's how Coach Donnan said that yesterday.
I think one of the things you got to always look at, Brandon, is who's going to be blocking for the guys. I mean, you look at what happened when we had the really good backs over the years, and when you got offensive linemen that are draftable or that are all SEC caliber, then that enhances your chances to be ranked right up there with the great backs. You just can't make a lot of yards on your own to get to the line of scrimmage, and I think therein lies the real deal for us this year. If our line can make any kind of progress from last year, I think you got a tremendous line coach in Pittman, and I think if we can get a better line of scrimmage where these guys can operate more after they've broken the line of scrimmage, then they can be right up there with anybody in the country.
Boy, I know that's true, and I know Georgia fans know that's true as well, and you really can't talk about Nick Chubb and Sony Michel this upcoming season without also paying attention to what might happen with the Georgia offensive line. And the line that struggled in 2016, is it better in 2017 and better enough to see Chubb and Michel both at their best? Which at that point kind of leads us to, I think, some pretty important questions about these offensive linemen coming up this season. You know, is Lamont Galliard, for instance, is he ready to take on the full mantle of everything that comes with being the center in big-time college football? We know how good recent centers have been for Georgia. That's been a real sort of a heritage position for Georgia lately. Is Galliard ready to become the next guy in that line? one of the things that makes me think about that is, did y'all see where ESPN kind of went through and looked at on each of their top 25 teams, who's the guy on that team that might one day be able to be a coach? And for Georgia, the guy that was mentioned was Isaiah Wynn, who right now looks like he may be Georgia's left tackle. But when you think about the coach along the offensive line, you think about that guy being the center. At one point in time, it seemed like Wynn might be being groomed to be Georgia's center. That didn't really stick. He sort of moved around other places. But the center of the offensive line kind of is the coach for that group. Whatever leadership skills Wynn possesses, can Galliard copy some of that and do that from the spot there in the middle of that Georgia offensive line? We'll see this season. And as he learns center, you may also have Dyshon Sims learning right tackle. That's a new spot for him. He's kind of spent the spring moving around to some different spots. Maybe, at least for the moment, he's settled on right tackle for right now. Kirby Smart back in the spring did talk about the fact that he's okay with Sims moving around because he wants to see just exactly where the best spot for him in that group is. Here's how Kirby Smart's talked about that.
I think the only way to get comfortable with him plugging anywhere is to do it with him everywhere. I mean, there's a theory that he could be a left tackle too, you know, because if Isaiah wasn't there, who would it be? And I think there's a battle going on there for who the two spot is at that position. So we'll continue to move guys around. We want guys to be flexible.
So you've got familiar names in potentially new places, and that leads to some questions about the offensive line. But probably the bigger question than that is this expected competition that's supposed to go down this summer, is that going to happen? We had some of that during the spring with, you know, some of the guys from the 2016 class getting a year older, maybe a little bit better. Maybe guys like Solomon Kinley, Ben Cleveland pushing for playing time a little more than they have in the past. Pat Allen certainly seemed to be able to do that. DeMarcus Hayes was involved in that competition during the spring. But the real competition, as you know, is going to be in the summer when those freshman offensive linemen showed up, when those freshman offensive linemen arrived, ready to compete and fight for playing time. And yet there are those rumors out there right now that maybe, Natori Johnson not on campus yet, along with two other incoming freshmen for Georgia. What does that do to potentially upend the competition this summer between those freshmen and the guys who've been on campus for a year, two, or more? Well, I can't help but think back to what Natori Johnson said with us. We did the broadcast with him back during the winter leading up to signing day at Marlowe's when Jeff Sintel asked him, what's the way he was looking to make an impact when he arrived at Georgia? Well, Natori Johnson made it be known in no uncertain terms. He was coming to do more than just compete. He was coming to win a starting spot. Remember what Johnson said then?
What's going to be your mindset? What are you going to do immediately to try to get noticed, to get on the field and make an impact?
Take whoever is right there in my spot. I'm going to beat that guy out. Whoever, how many guys, I don't know how many guys. I think it's two guys I got to beat out right now. I'm most definitely going to take that position, that right guard, left guard position, and show that Sony Michel and Nick Chubb that what we're going to do with the freshmen.
Show Sony Michel and Nick Chubb what we're going to do with the freshmen. That's the attitude that Georgia needs. And that is what Jim Donovan was just talking about. For Sony Michel and Nick Chubb to be the best tandem of running backs in the country the way the ESPN predicts they might be, then, boy, you've got to have an offensive line firing on all cylinders, which means all hands on deck contributing to a competition during the summer that produces the best five during the fall. So maybe it's Natori Johnson that provides that attitude. Maybe it's somebody else. But the attitude that Johnson just expressed is the attitude that Georgia needs. Somebody stepping in saying, I'm going to earn playing time. I'm going to take it away from somebody right now who currently thinks he's going to get it. We are going to show Nick Chubb and Sony Michel that we're opening holes for them. And as we open holes for them and they compile big yardage, and the Georgia offense gets better every step along the way as well. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Great to have you with us. Hope you'll check us out each and every day on Facebook Live, 10 a.m. If you want to see what the show looks like, you can see it there on the Dog Nation Facebook page. If you're in the Athens area, you can listen to us on the radio at noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form wherever podcasts are found. That's iTunes, SoundCloud. We post the show at dognation.com. We make it easy for you to find, and we are thankful that you have found it, and certainly appreciate you being a part of Dog Nation Daily here during this offseason as we get ready and excited about the upcoming fall. And one of the things that we are most excited about is this September, the big Dog Nation invasion to South Bend. And don't forget, courtesy of our friends at R.S. Andrews, right now, you can go to dognation.com. And at dognation.com, you can sign up for our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway to South Bend. Your chance to win a spot on the Dog Nation Invasion bus. tickets, airfare, lodging for the big one this September as we travel from Chicago over to South Bend for the game. Your chance to win right now, courtesy of R.S. Andrews at DogNation.com. Get signed up. A few days left to do this. I need to find out the exact date, but coming up not too long from now, we're going to do the giveaway for the R.S. Andrews Dog Nation Invasion winner right here live on the air on Dog Nation Daily. I'm really excited about doing that. Also excited about Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville this October. We do our Gator Hater Countdown each and every day here on Dog Nation Daily, now 134 days away from Georgia and Florida. I want you to check out shopdognation.com. You can get a Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirt with the Dog Nation Daily logo, the Gator Hater license plate on the front. I am pretty sure we've got all the sizes. I know some of you had a hard time finding the bigger sizes earlier. I think we are restocked and reloaded there. All sizes, free shipping. It's all there for you at shopdognation.com. Hope you'll check that out. Really fun conversation with Mike Johnson coming up. We'll get into the Sony Michel, Nick Chubb conversation with him, a guy that certainly understands offensive line play. What can we expect from the Georgia offensive line this year in terms of opening those holes and providing some protection for Chubb and Michel? Mike Johnson, the former All-American, will be a great guest to have on that subject, and I know you'll enjoy that. It's really fun to have you with us on Dog Nation Daily today. Hope you enjoy the rest of the show, including our good friend Mike Johnson right now. And I'll say hello to Mike Johnson and invite you to check out, us out on SEC Country Live each and every Monday through Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country Facebook page. I think we have a lot of fun each and every day, and certainly we have fun when Mike joins us here on Dog Nation Daily as well. Mike, welcome back to the program. How you doing?
Yeah, thanks for having me, buddy. And, yeah, you're right. We do have a lot of fun, and I think a lot of the commenters and people watching have fun, too, so it's been a good time.
Yeah, no, it has been a good time. Before you joined me a few minutes ago, I was talking about something that we talked about yesterday on SEC Country Live, and that is the possibility that Nick Chubb, Sony Michel are the best duo tandem of running backs in the country. And we shared the audio of Jim Donnan saying, hold on now, be careful. For them to be good, you've got to have a great performance from the offensive line as well. And as an offensive lineman, and I know that's something that you agree with, that before you can make your full evaluation on Chubb and Michel, you also want to see just how much better this Georgia offensive line gets in 2017 after struggling in 2016.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, you know, when we're comparing backs and things like that and running games, I think you have to take a minute and look around the SEC at the offensive lines. They're going to be blocking in front of them. And, you know, we mentioned yesterday that you could have thrown a Raleigh Williams and a Devon Whaley in there. They've got a decent offensive line in front of them, but now Raleigh Williams is gone. So now you kind of, you know, turn your attention to an Alabama running stable that seems to have four or five running backs, not to mention Jalen Hurts that's going to rip off 1,000 yards. You know, and they're a pretty good offensive line. I think when you're talking about just duos, though, it does now come down to Georgia and Auburn. And listen, Auburn's got a two-headed stable at running back that, you know, very consistent, good running game, but it's the depth up front to me that kind of separates Auburn right now in terms of what they're able to do on the field. I think that when you look at Georgia's rushing attack, that Nick Chubb and Sony Michel have a chance to really get to the next level this year. It's going to take that offensive line though, and it's going to take Jim Chaney figuring out how to, you know, spread these guys around with the ball and get them both some carries. I think that Auburn has just shown the ability to do that last year. And listen, the statistics all kind of map out being the same, and I just look forward to seeing how this thing plays out. I think it's going to be a fun year.
But let me ask you, though, because you mentioned Sam Pittman, and as a guy that played the offensive line, you're a good person to give us some insight on this. When an offensive line struggles, you come back the next year. Does that mean you need to get better linemen, or can you make linemen better? In other words, you know, do you just need to go out there and recruit a better, you know, species of player, or can your coaching staff, in this case Pittman, the offensive line coach, can he, through better technique, better tactics, get more out of the players that he currently has on the roster?
110%, Brandon, you can make the players on your roster better. I don't think it just starts with Sam Pittman. I think it starts in the weight room, which is, I think, one of the huge things that Kirby Smart was bringing was that, you know, that attitude in the weight room that, you know, has been learned through Scott Cochran and company over at Alabama. So I think you can definitely do that in 1 year, kind of turn these guys around and get them better and get them playing the right way. And I saw it happen, you know, when Coach Saban, you know, brought in Joe Pendry, our offensive line coach at Alabama. He turned around what was basically the same group of players, and we ended up that year in 2007 or 2008, I believe, with an Outland Trophy winner and two All-Americans right there, and I played between them. So you can definitely turn those guys around. Now, I think it just takes a little bit of work, and it takes a good coach in the right place. And like I said, it takes a good strength and conditioning program. But I I think they're definitely all trending in the right direction right now as we sit and look at it mid-June, that you know, they really do feel like they're going to have a good running game, and you heard Kirby Smart say that he feels good about where they're going.
You expressed some skepticism about something the other day, and I want to talk to you about it here for a moment. We're talking about the, you know, the possibility that a Davin Bellamy, Lorenzo Carter, that tandem of outside linebackers at Georgia, they might be able to produce double-digit sacks this year. Each guy might have that. They only combined for 10 a year ago. They might be able to both kind of leap up into that double-digit total this year. And I certainly agree with you that it's going to be hard for both those guys to find that number. I would suggest maybe a little easier for Carter than Bellamy, because I think Carter's the better overall prospect as a player. But my reason for wanting to have this conversation is not because I believe they're going to do it, but in some form or fashion, I think Georgia needs them to kind of do this, because I think Georgia overall, for it to take its next step defensively, they got to find more sacks from somebody somewhere. And so from that standpoint, I think Carter and Bellamy are probably the best candidates, though, right?
They're definitely the best candidates. You know, and my problem with that was it was not them as players or actually the number. It's, you know, 10 sacks is hard to come by, yeah. Brandon, in the SEC. I mean, it really, when you look at last year, and we talked about it, Jonathan Allen, Derek Barnett, and Ard Key. You, we're not even mentioning, by the way, the first overall pick in the NFL draft, Myles Garrett, didn't even get there. So,
fair enough.
It's just, it's an incredible statistic to think about 10, and to have two guys on the same defense, you know, I think it becomes a little bit of a reach to see that happen. I definitely think, listen, I think they've got as good a chance as anybody, just from an individual standpoint. I just don't know that there's enough to go around to get them both to 10. I think that, listen, having John Atkins in the middle, having Trenton Thompson in the middle, that's definitely going to help them out. And I think the defense as a whole is going to be incredible. I just don't know how both of those guys get to the quarterback 10 times next year each.
But let me sort of zero in on a word you just used the word incredible. And I think the Georgia defense of the last few years has obviously stopped just short of being that. Go back and look at Jeremy Pruitt's tenure, 2014, 2015. That's a good defense. But you know, they weren't producing sacks at a real high level. Last year, I think you'd give Kirby Smart, Mel Tucker some credit for, you know, kind of continuing the success that Pruitt had had. They really got a pretty good defensive year overall out of Georgia. But I don't know how scared teams were about the Georgia Bulldogs. When you think about, like, say, Jeff Collins' Florida defense in 2015 or what Alabama has been the last few years, both with Kirby and Pruitt as defensive coordinators, where you're really getting in the backfield, you're wreaking a lot of havoc, you're getting a lot of sacks. I mean, that to me is what the definition of incredible is. And, boy, to me it's going to be hard for Georgia to kind of take that next step if we're not talking about somebody finding a lot of sacks somewhere.
Right, and I think maybe I just have a different outlook on what an incredible
sure.
defense is. I think that, that Georgia's ability to limit the big play, to me, was what made them exceptional last year. And you know, we can talk about them being a top 20 defense and returning 10 starters, but I thought what was incredible to me was their just ability to stay away from the big play. And we only saw it a few times per game last year. I think they averaged 3.6 times per game last year where they actually gave up plays of more than 20 yards. And listen, I don't care how you're measuring statistics. That is actually an incredible incredible way to go about playing defense. Now, if they do turn things around this year and are able to get to the quarterback much more, then I think that actually makes them an elite defense. I think that's where you see them shift into one of those top five powerhouses at defense. And I fully expect them to do that in year two under Kirby Smart. And like I said, they've got the guys on the back end. They feel good, can cover these guys. It's just all about releasing that pass rush up front. And returning all four defensive line starters is going to be a huge help.
One of the things that could be interesting for a lot of SEC teams this year in terms of making sack totals go up is, you know, compared 2017 to 2016, I've got to imagine, maybe it ends up not being true, but I got to imagine there are going to be a lot more passes thrown in the SEC this year. When you think about Patterson at Ole Miss and Bentley at South Carolina, Zaire's probably going to be a bit of a running quarterback at Florida, but maybe Tennessee throws it more this year. You know, Georgia's still got Jacob Eason. It sounds like they want to try to throw it with Jalen Hurts at Alabama a little more. There may be more sack opportunities in the SEC for all the teams this year than we've seen in the past, simply because of the fact that a lot of these SEC teams have these young quarterbacks, and I imagine they probably kind of want to take them out for a little bit of a spin.
Well, I think there's definitely a possibility of that happened, but I think that what you have to understand is there's two different ways to attack passers. When you have a guy that is a dual threat, like, you know, say a Malik Zaire, like we expect him to be running around, you have to rush the passer in a different capacity. You have to go about it in a different way. You can't rush the edge and open up those lanes up front. You kind of have to press those offensive linemen back into the pocket, make sure you're keeping gaps sound and worry about some of those guys taking off and ripping off 20-yard, 30-yard gains. I think the game planning becomes different. You know, when you have those guys that have the legs, like a Jake Bentley or a Jalen Hurts, like some of the guys are going to finish. And listen, Georgia is becoming quickly one of the only teams in the SEC East that has that pro-style quarterback that doesn't take off and rip off big yards. So, you know, they're not expected to see that either, you know, throughout fall camp, throughout practice. So once those dual-threat quarterbacks really do start developing and start taking off and running, it changes how you're going to rush the passer. And I think, it doesn't allow you the ability to kind of pin your ears back and rush the edge. You really have to push that pocket and try to keep those guys contained. And I think that in and of itself kind of keeps the sack numbers down.
So we've had a lot of these lists that have come out, most of this based on Bob Stoops' retirement. That was a coach that had a national championship. He's gone. The number of active coaches who have one's pretty short right now. There's not a lot of guys currently coaching who've won national championships. So a lot of the media, including myself, trying to figure out. So of the guys who don't have one, who's going to get one? And it seems like when you see these names pop up in the SEC, you see guys like, you know, Jim McElwain on a list like that, Kirby Smart on a list like that. You could probably talk about Malzahn, people like that too. But, I mean, how do you view Kirby Smart's chances of maybe joining the list of guys, active coaches with national championships, and how would you compare him to some of the guys who don't have one?
Yeah, I think that when you put Kirby Smart next to a lot of guys, he's got as good a chance as anybody. And he's definitely, you know, developed talent at a high level around there already. We mentioned it, a top 20 defense a year ago and expecting them to get even better this year. You feel like he's got the offensive line moving in the right direction. So I think for that reason, you definitely include him in that group. I think you've got to give Jim McElwain a little bit of credit for what he's done down there, especially if he can put together another top-tier defense this year. All of a sudden, he becomes strong into that category as well. And I mentioned yesterday on the show an Ed Orgeron, and it's not so much about Ed Orgeron's coaching ability. It's about the talent that he's blessed with. And, I kind of pointed to some friends of mine talking about it, that Gene Chizik. I mean, look at what Gene Chizik did in 2010, being able to win a national title. He didn't recruit all those guys. He didn't have to bring those in and develop. And a lot of those guys were already left over at Auburn. And he proved that he could win a national championship in that second year for him, but that he was going to have to move on after a couple years, and he ended up getting fired 2 years after a national title. So I think that when we talk about Ed Orgeron, he can be mentioned in that sense, just taking over the talent that Les Miles brought in. But right now, like I said, it's projection. You just don't know what you've got in a lot of these guys, and a lot of questions are left to be answered around the SEC as far as these head coaches go. It's going to be interesting to see it play out.
So on our video show yesterday, I think I did this on Dog Nation Daily, on the video portion at least, I talked about, you know, the comparison to Mark Richt here, and there was the USA Today column that kind of had Richt ranked ahead of Kirby Smart on the list of coaches likely to win a national championship. Is it sour grapes on my part to be bothered by that? Because I think it's ludicrous to think that Richt at Miami is in a better place than Kirby Smart is at Georgia in terms of winning a national championship. But I'll also acknowledge maybe there's an element of this that's just sort of sour grapes with me thinking the media is trying to stir the pot on this. I mean, you're more of a neutral observer. I mean, how would you compare side by side Richt and Smart on this?
I thought Mark Richt was an excellent guy, an excellent coach. I was kind of shocked, honestly. Not shocked, but, you know, I didn't want Georgia to move on from him because I thought he really was a good guy for that job. I mean, he's going to get you in the SEC championship game every now and then, maybe win a championship. He's going to win 10 games for the most part a lot of the time. But when I see him move on to Miami, I don't know what the argument is for him being ahead of Kirby Smart. That was my problem with the entire thing is, you know, are we saying that a guy's going to be better off at Miami than he is at Georgia, where he can, you know, he can recruit the entire state of Georgia and really they can put a wall up around for that university, as opposed to in Miami, you might have a little bit more talent there, but you're recruiting against the Florida State, so even at this point, South Florida with Charlie Strong and some of the other coaches down there. I just don't see it happening, and maybe I'm being short-sighted as well, and maybe the ACC does provide a better path or an easier path at the national title game, but if Mark Richt couldn't get it done in his tenure at Georgia when he's there for 15 or whatever years he was, I don't see how he's going to move on to a place like Miami, where obviously the funding isn't quite as there as Georgia, and they don't have the wall up around the state like he did at Georgia, and then all of a sudden appear in a national championship game. To me, Kirby Smart's got as good a chance as anybody, and he should have been on that list way ahead of Mark Richt, in my opinion.
And, of course, people will point out, including some of the writers who've written this, that Richt currently has the number one class for 2018, but – you know, I did the research on this. They had like 14 decommitments in 2017, had at least 9 in 2016. That's, 23 decommitments in 2 years. All these guys they currently have aren't sticking with Miami. They have a history of decommitments with the program there. So let's wait and see how the Richt recruiting class at Miami looks once it's all said and done and it's finalized in February. My guess is it's not going to be anywhere near the number one class at that point in time. But once again, maybe that's sour grapes. I'll at least acknowledge that.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, Brandon, here's my problem with the whole ordeal. Even if he does sign the number one class, look at some of the talent that he was blessed with at Georgia. I mean, look, we talked about it yesterday. Even some of the quarterbacks that he had in his tenure, you know, there at Georgia, he had some top flight five-star type guys that he brought on the campus, some incredible, you know, amount of running back talent that he's had there, some incredible talent on the defense. And he's always recruited at a high level and just has never been able to get to that national championship game. I don't see why all of a sudden he becomes better at, you know, keeping those guys, you know, on the field, you know, due to injuries or due to penalties. I don't see why all of a sudden he becomes better at developing some of that talent and goes down to Miami and is successful. I'm not sure where the map is that comes about for Mark Richt getting to a national title game. I just don't see it.
Hey, last thing for you. So Pat Dye says, you know, 500 years Auburn couldn't match Alabama. We've had some fun with that on this show. We've had some fun with that on SEC Country Live. I understand the point he was trying to make, but doesn't this take things a little too far? And if you're an Auburn fan today, it's kind of tough to walk that one back, isn't it?
Oh, it's definitely tough, you know, if you're an Auburn fan to walk that one back. And I understand. Listen, I said it yesterday on the show. I disagree with Pat Dye. I think that Auburn has developed their own kind of niche. And I think that they've had to go the opposite direction of a lot of things that Alabama did. And listen, when I got to school, you know, Auburn was the place that had the Heisman trophies. Alabama was the place that had the national championships. Now, both of those have gotten mixed up here in the last, you know, 7 or 8 years with Mark Ingram and Derrick Henry winning their trophies and Auburn going to a national title game and losing another one, you know, winning another one back in 2010 with Cam Newton and the Heisman. So I think that definitely the lines have gotten blurred. But always, Auburn's always just had a different way of doing things in the state of Alabama. They're the ones with the cool Under Armour uniforms. You know, they're the ones that play the loud music, and they're the ones that are, you know, it's different. And we've talked about this a couple times. They're different. It's a different vibe down for those Auburn people. But I think they've developed their own niche where they don't have to chase Alabama. They have their own program in and of itself that can stand alone nationally in the perception of how they do things. And I think that should be celebrated. Maybe that's what Pat Dye was trying to say, but I think it was interesting to hear him come out and say that they'll never be able to chase the tradition of Alabama because, you know, that's obviously always debatable in the state there.
Well, speaking of debates, we'll have some good ones. 3 p.m. Eastern time today, SEC Country Live on the SEC Country Facebook page. Mike, it's always fun. Looking forward to again today, and we'll talk to you then.
Yeah, brother. I'll see you later this afternoon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, time now for our SEC Through. And as I said, I always love Mike Johnson here on Dog Nation Daily and enjoy working with him on SEC Country Live. Check us out 3 p.m. Eastern time on the SEC Country Facebook page. We'll have a lot of fun with that. Speaking of fun, Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend this September. Going to be a fun one there for the big one. Of course, it's brought to you in part by Kroger. Easy savings. Download hundreds of digital coupons on our Kroger app. You can check them out at Kroger.com. You can find that Kroger app. Looking forward to having them with us for the Dog Nation Invasion to South Bend. Time for SEC Through. Some of the big stories around the SEC right now. Let me start with this. A recruiting target of interest to UGA fans has released his top six. Kyler McMichael comes out with the top six here. We'll show you if you're watching us on video, we'll show that to you. Georgia is in the mix here. Auburn in the mix. Clemson, Tennessee, Florida State. Those are the schools in the mix at the moment for Kyler McMichael. This is a guy that's probably a defensive back, although maybe I guess he has some potential use on offense. Interesting conversation earlier in the week with Benjamin Wolk on SEC Country Live. We talked about McMichael and his relationship with Auburn right now. We'll see how that plays out. It seems like whatever was there between him and Georgia may have softened a little bit recently, but Georgia does make the cut for the top six of Kyler McMichael. So we'll see how that goes in the days ahead. He puts that out on social media. Butch Jones goes on a Birmingham radio station, WJOX. You may have heard of it. And Jones is saying some of the things that he's kind of said in the past. And in particular, the quote's kind of centered around this notion of, boy, if you look back where we were before I got here, and if you look how far I've come, or how far we've come, but he really means himself, how far we've come, I'm not sure anybody would have expected us to be now where we are now back then. And he references some, you know, obscure stat of the win-loss total that's been compiled over the last couple of years. And listen, it's not my job on this show to do the bidding of Tennessee fans, but there is an element of this in which I almost feel for Tennessee fans, how could they continue to hear him disparage what the program once was and kind of praise what it is now? That seems incredibly self-serving and frankly demeaning to the history of Tennessee. yeah, the Derek Dooley era was not a good one. And the way that Lane Kiffin left Tennessee, that's not really a good thing either for Tennessee. It caused some problems with the Vols. But let's not forget, you know, what Tennessee as a program had been for about a century before Butch Jones ever kind of got involved with this situation. And when you hear Butch Jones talk about the situation at Tennessee and how far they've come, it almost makes it sound like, and I know this is not what he means, but it almost makes it sound like he was somehow doing Tennessee a favor by even taking the job. You know, pulling them out of the doldrums and pulling them out of the wretched swamp that the program had kind of fallen face first into. It is a really weird mangling of history. It leads me to believe that one way or another, Butch Jones's days are just numbered at Tennessee. Doesn't have an appreciation for what Tennessee once was. Doesn't have an appreciation for what Tennessee fans wanted to be right now. And he just talks himself in circles. I don't think there's anything he can do on the field to save his job because I don't think he has enough talent. And in terms of getting a free pass or at least maybe a bit of a second chance or a break from Tennessee fans, I think his own words make that almost impossible. Tom Luganville, the ESPN analyst, has said that he thinks that Mississippi State quarterback Nick Fitzgerald will be a first-round draft pick one day. Now, this is, you know, kind of an interesting prediction to make. I guess, you know, overall, the numbers for Fitzgerald from a first-round draft pick standpoint, not overwhelming in his first year as a starter, but a lot of guys have gotten better over the course of a career, so that doesn't prohibit him from one day being a first-round draft pick. But what makes this interesting is not so much for Fitzgerald, but for the teams that Fitzgerald plays, including the Georgia Bulldogs. You know, the game that Georgia will have against Mississippi State here late in the month of September, all of a sudden that game takes an entirely different feel. The mood, the atmosphere around the game is completely different when you think about, hey, having to face the kind of quarterback who could potentially be a first-round draft pick. And it's not just Luganville who's kind of saying this kind of stuff. If you look at some of the futures odds on the Heisman Trophy, you can make a bet on Nick Fitzgerald. Now, it's a long-shot bet. Fitzgerald's not going to win the award. But the fact that he's even in that conversation, even on the list, even on the very long list of teams who could win the players who could win the Heisman Trophy, I think that speaks to the fact that just maybe that Georgia game against Mississippi State is slightly more tough than maybe it looks on paper. We'll see how it plays out, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, as we wrap up the show today, I want to give you a quick programming note. Next week, I'm on vacation. I got some good news and some bad news. The bad news is we'll have no video show next week. So if you watch us on Facebook Live at 10 a.m., we'll take a break from that for a week. I'll be back the following Monday, and we'll do it all the way we always do. No video show next week. Good news, though, is we'll still be on at noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. So I'll have a podcast each and every day. So for those of you who watch us on video, but you maybe haven't checked out the podcast, I think, is a great, easy, convenient way to listen to the show, especially if you're driving around in traffic, you're working out, whatever you got going on. The podcast might be a great way for you to do that. So check that out next week. However, this is only Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday. Regular episode of Dog Nation Daily tomorrow on Facebook, radio, and podcast form. Jeff Sintel's here. We'll talk recruiting and have a whole bunch of fun. Hope you'll join us then. Dog Nation Daily tomorrow, and hope you have a great day.